Welcome to Reel to Reel with Michelle and Peter. Welcome back to Reel to Reel with Michelle and Peter. I'm Michelle.
I'm Peter.
And today we have P.A. Turner. Welcome and thanks for hanging out with us today.
Hey, thanks. Cheers to you. It's Friday, so I'm having a cerveza on my dock house that I stay at. So it's great Cheers. To have you on your guys' show. It's great to be able to share time with anybody. I just today, if you guys don't mind, I'll just throw this in there. Every year I go back to my hometown. That's where I'm at now. And I talk to the seniors. And like right now, these are about to be graduating seniors. And I just said, hey, I'm you from the future. 35 years from now, what would you like to know? And typical kid fashion, they clam up and they don't have any questions. That's not true. A lot of them have questions. But yeah, that's what I do every year, twice a year, like each semester, so that there's as many kids as possible I get to talk to. And it's a real blast to be able to do that. And likewise, being able to like go on someone else's thing. Like you guys created this incredible thing and you do it. And you guys know, look, there's a lot of podcasts that start and then they disappear instantly, right? But you guys don't do that. You exist. You've got a bunch of shows and that's laudable. So again, cheers to you all. I appreciate you guys doing it. And I really appreciate you having me on.
Well, cheers and thank you.
Thank you. Absolutely. I mean, it's an absolute pleasure to be able to sit with you because I know that you have your own show as well. And from what we've discussed prior, you do very well. You want to talk about your show a little bit?
Sure. Love to talk about it. It's called The Break It Down Show. And I get to tell a lot of incredible stories. This is a spoiler, I guess. I used to be a spy when I was in the Army, and I've done a lot of work overseas, and I've encountered a lot of incredible circumstances. So in part, my show is that. It's like, here's the spy talking to these incredible people, but I also talk to a lot of my peers in the intelligence world, and we get into, you know, what it is to really do this job. You know, like you think about what you actually know about an intelligence operative who goes overseas into another country and works, right? You don't know anything about this job. Even people in the military, my peers in the Army, we don't exactly know what you do. We don't like it because you might look at us and start looking, investigate. I'm like, hey, don't worry about all that. Like I'm on your guys' side. I'm here to help you all. But it's weird how there's such little knowledge about what me and my peers do. And so I spent a lot of time, not all of it, but I spent a lot of time talking to folks who are in the human world, sort of explaining counterintelligence, human collection, and these kind of things. But I also talked to, just incredible PhDs, musicians. I had Bruce Dickinson, the lead singer of Iron Maiden, on my show about 3 weeks ago.
Very cool.
I get to do some really incredible things. It's really fantastic.
Love that. Now, when did you have that position as a spy and how long did you do it for?
I started in 1994 and then I guess you would call it retired. I stopped going overseas actively in 2012 when I came back. And so, 18 years ish, maybe a little less than that, but a lot of that time was deployed to combat zones.
Oh, wow.
You were a spy the entire time?
That was my job. Yeah. So some of the time you're in garrison, which is home, and you're doing whatever the mission requires there. And there's all kinds of different things that we do. But I've got over 70 months deployed. And a vast majority of that time is me off the camp daily talking to the locals, looking for the evil people in the area, help us figure out what we're doing wrong. So yeah, that was my job. And I did a variety, maybe I'm training someone to do it better. Maybe I'm conducting operations in some kind of way stateside. But yeah, that was what I did. That was the only job I really had in the military of any substance.
So like fake name, fake identity, fake everything?
Nope. None of that. Now, look, on occasion, they'll have these things. They'll give you a cover, right? And that cover is usually related to concealing the nature of the operation, right? So if I'm going to do Operation X, some examples, maybe we're going to conduct an investigation of somebody. And so we have to keep that a secret because while we're doing the investigation, we don't want them to know, right? We're trying to conceal that thing. And so hey, you can call me at my office, you know, and then you call the office and there's someone there that's like, you know, Abraham Plumbing or whatever, right? That may not be something that might happen, you know, or really there's just someone there to answer the phone and take notes because no one else should call because we're not trying to actually make any money plumbing. So these aren't terribly unknown things. These are things you see in movies all the time. You see it in the movie Argo, right? They have a cover operation. So those are the kind of things you might see. And on occasion, I have found myself working with those kinds of things. But really, it's not all that big of a secret. It's just the nature of that secret. That's what's classified. So like you say, this is Operation Pumpkin Spice. And we're acting like we're a spice company that's importing from India. You know, like, and what we're really doing is we're infiltrating, and this is all made up, right? And we're infiltrating college campuses to find Chinese students who are working on project pre-classification and trying to counter that effort. Like, that might be a real operation. I probably just made someone lose their minds because I just nailed exactly what they were doing.
No, right? I wouldn't worry about it because it's always a flower company.
That's kind of true. They also they'll call, like, it's a funny thing, like they'll have an office and they'll give it a ridiculous name, like the off, like it's like the most benign thing, like the Office of Immediate Operations, and you're like, well, what is that, right? And so there's all these things, like you see a job description for a counterintelligence agent and it's always very, very benign, says nothing, and so you know it says everything when you see those kind of things.
Was there at any point, did you think you were going to translate it into maybe like be a CIA operative or work for the federal government outside of the military?
Yeah, for sure. Because you're always trying to figure out what the next thing is. Maybe you want, and the Army is very restrictive and rightfully so, like what they let us do, because once you let us loose, boy, we are hard to contain, and we are intoxicating for a commander because we have all this access to information. And if you're good, like I am for good, you have techniques that allow you to get stuff that nobody else gets. And so the commander's like, I don't care what you all do to everybody else. No one even talks about Pete, you know? And so they protect you because you're like, for me, for a commander, what I could do for a commander was very rare. When I show up, I'm predicting the future for them. Not because I'm smart, not because I'm omnipotent, but because I've done this path so many times. I'm like, here are the timelines. We're going to start to figure out. And I don't know specifically what it is. I just know what's going to happen. And more importantly, I know exactly what they're going to do. So I will predict their future for them and how they're going to behave. And they're like, it blows their minds, right? And so that's specifically what I do and how I approach it. But I'm also a very unique counterintelligence agent in that my approach to things is born in my having stayed proximate to the ground. So I was always at the ground level. I didn't promote up because I would move laterally within the organization, either working for, with, or in the Army. And so I got better. Like, I was talking to an agent the other day, and I'm like, how long did it take you to get good? And he said the exact, I already know what the answer is, right? He said the exact amount of months that he was in. And I'm like, what if you quadrupled that number of months? Would you be better? And the person's like, hey, wow, yes, I would be incredibly good at the job at that point, right? But it's hard for him to say that openly. You have to like work your way into that truth where they can say, oh, okay, yeah, I understand what you're saying. Yes, you would be bothered. Well, I am the guy that did that. I stayed on the ground a lot longer and I got a lot better as a collector because of my access to the local environment.
Did that hurt you in terms of compensation or rank or promotion by just moving laterally?
I mean, yeah, for sure, right? So it kind of going back to the original question, like would I want to work with the CIA, FBI? Because FBI's got counterintelligence agents, the Department of Energy has counterintelligence agents. And these are all places I can go, but they're all slightly different versions of the job. And when you're inside that field, you're like, this is nowhere near what I know how to do. Doesn't mean I can't do it. Doesn't mean I'm not qualified, but I don't have the same level of chops either, right? And then the institution, do I want to work for them, right? So right after 9/11, the CIA opened the floodgates. For a long time, they didn't want people like me because they want to bring their own version of that person in, and they don't want an Army person to come in with their pre-existing training, right? So 9/11 happens, like, we need more people, so let's talk to Pete. So they talked to me, and we already kind of don't like each other anyhow, right? Like, I'm not super stoked on the CIA, all right? This sounds arrogant and everything else, but I know who they are and what they do, and I don't know that I want to be that, right? And so they do this whole thing, and this is 100% true. So I do the initial thing. They act very arrogant towards me, like, do you read there's magazines, like, do you read The Economist? And I'm like, no, I sell computers right now. That's what I do. Oh, you don't read The Economist? Oh, gosh. You know, like, well,
for any reason.
Yeah. Do you have a degree? Is it chance? By any chance? I'm like, yeah, I've got a master's degree. Oh, good. What university did you go to? And I'm like, yeah, I went to Cal State Hayward. And I'm like, who? What? And then I got a master's from University of Phoenix. Now, like, this is so long ago. Like, we never talking about. Well, we'll still get together and meet. And so I go to the hotel. That's all true, right? I go to the hotel and I have to knock on door like 6:06. I go to knock on the door and I think to myself, this is what these guys are going to do, right? They're trying to be sneaky. And so I turn around and I look at room 605 and I'm like, I bet you they're going to open this door. And you know what they did? They opened the door 605.
Nice.
And trying to be like set me off my footing. And then I'll think about this. Now they know, they're like, oh man, how did this guy know to turn the other direction? I didn't. I just kind of know them, right? And at that moment, right then, I was like, I kind of lost respect for them. Now, look, that's unfair. They do incredible work, and I've met a lot of those guys, and they're all super awesome. But I just, it's those little things that made me go, nope, I don't want to do that. Plus, my daughter was young, and even though I was gone a lot, I didn't want to be, because I would have been in clandestine service, right? I didn't want to be gone all the time. And I was just like, no, I have to do all this work overseas for sure, but I don't want to miss out. My daughter was about 5, right? And so I'm like, I can't miss out on all this. So no, I didn't take that next step. Yes, I applied for several different things. No, I didn't get picked up for those things. Because when you apply, there's always like some era that you're trying to satisfy, right? Like when I applied for this program, they're like, oh, you have to have a language to get in. And I'm like, yeah, but I know some people on the inside. Let me apply. So I apply. And they're like, oh, you're too stupid to have a language.
Oh, my gosh. Like,
yeah. Yeah, they don't say that. But I mean, actually, they act like, oh, this was the missing piece of the puzzle. And I'm like, yeah, but I've got more ground experience than anybody in your office, probably several agents combined. Does capacity to do the job on the ground? And we probably wouldn't have done that kind of work. But I'm saying, like, it's not that I don't have any credentials, you guys. And like, yeah, but if you just knew Spanish, you know, like, Spanish is the difference. I know probably 1,000 words in Spanish, but I'm not fluent in it. Give me a few weeks and I probably can have a conversation with you in Spanish. But during that time frame, it was a critical thing that they needed, right? So no, I didn't get that next job. And my movement around gave me great access. And I always say that my career was very unique, but it also was so unique, it is hard to market, right? That skill, like, because everybody thinks they know how to do this job, and then they'll dismiss my experience in the field. And I'm like, you don't understand how much I've done this and the kind of work I've done. And then when you get people who listen, who are from my field, they're like, wow, man, wow. Like, you are, but we all have incredible experiences, right? This is an incredible field. So we all have a lot of arrogance. We all have a lot of ego. So when I go to apply, yeah, man, sometimes I don't get picked up. Sometimes they don't want to work with me. And frankly, I got sick of focusing on threat all the time, working around people who were, I don't want to say paranoid, but were obsessed with violence and threat and trying to prevent something, even if it was not real. I got sick of that approach to life. And so for me, really, even though I probably could have found some place to land, I wanted to be done with it. And so it had been a long time. I mean, I'd done a lot of work. So nope, I didn't get that next job. Yes, it probably impacted my long-term earnings, but my experience was really incredible. And no one can really take that away from me. You know, it was valuable in its own right. And I'm super proud of the work that I did and the people I worked with. And so there's some what ifs there, but also, good Lord, when I say that I was very good at this job, there's literally no one better in the military at this kind of collection than me. And I didn't meet anybody who had my kind of direct, constant experience in this field. So I take that against anybody, also respecting the fact that a lot of people have done a lot of incredible things over the last 25 years.
That's amazing. When you actually got out, what did you decide to do next?
I was going, yeah, I was trying to figure that out because I'm a very multi-talented, right? And this, mm-hmm. this is like the Pete Arrogance hour right now, but I had a lot of skills, right? And I could really help people in terms of culture. I could do some, a lot in the corporate, we'll call it espionage world, because it's mm-hmm. lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. And I applied. The people I knew were warlords. I didn't know the people that were hiring people to do my kind of work. I didn't know how to sell my skills to a company directly as a small business. I didn't know how to run a small business. I knew how to go sit on someone's couch and make friends with them and get them to tell me things they wouldn't otherwise say by building trust, right?
I can do that.
He does do that.
But I don't get paid for it.
You do not.
Jealous.
Yeah. Well, I don't get paid for it anymore either.
Touche.
The other thing is you can watch me, Pete. You'll appreciate this then. You can watch me work right in front of your face and you'll swear that I'm not doing anything, that I'm just dicking around, having a great time talking to somebody, right? But the whole time I'm not doing this to be nefarious or to own somebody. And look, there's times when I slip up and I do more than I probably am comfortable with doing personally because I can have influence on things. But at my best, I'm going to have a conversation right in front of you. I'm going to get all this great information. I'm going to be able to take it back to the people that I'm working for. I'm going to give it to them. And everybody's going to be like, he didn't do all that. I was with him the whole day. And I'm like, you must have missed when I was in charge of that whole conversation. Even though I let that person talk and it was imperceptible, I did it in plain sight. Mm-hmm.
So here's, and you obviously have training and skills well past anything I could even imagine. But what I know is that people love to talk and people love to talk about themselves. And if you can get someone just comfortable, ask them a simple question and get that ball rolling.
It opens the floodgates.
Yeah. And then you just kind of prompt in a couple whys and how comes and it just goes. I'm going to call out JJ, who says he listens. If you hear your name, I want you to message me. It's going to be like, oh my God, you do listen. But a buddy of mine, when we worked together, it was a joke that like, cause I worked a retail spot where I would just have long conversations with customers and they would tell me really goofy, ridiculous things. And the challenge was always, the number one challenge was, all right, get somebody to admit a murder. And it was tee hee. It never happened, but
that's good.
Well, but if anyone was going to do it in that little world, it was me. And this is so pretend and BS, but mm-hmm. for you, I think that's amazing. And it's interesting to hear, you talk about it almost sounds like pattern recognition, like your understanding of what's going to happen because you've seen it and you've seen it enough times where you just recognize the signs. And it's frustrating for me to hear that would-be employers almost come off combative to you because you weren't of the same ilk as them, but possibly better at the job. At least that's what I took from it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't put anything else in anyone's heart or mind, you know, but for sure, some of these businesses should have hired me because of what I do. And a lot of what I do is pattern recognition, right? And even more of what I do. So look, when you go overseas, there are everybody on the American side who works in my kind of field. They're all focused on threat. Who is going to blow us up? Who's going to blow other people up? When are they going to do it? What are they going to use? Where is that stuff? Here is the worst way to find that out. To go out and ask people, who's going to blow us up? What are they going to use? When are they going to do it, right? It's patently ridiculous to you all, right?
You have to hold your shirt. I mean, the people can't see, but I'm like pinching my shirt and reaching it out for the microphone. Can you just tell me really quick, who are we looking out for? Who's the bad guy?
Right. And whenever I talk about this, I do my bad German accent. And I'm like, lowest the bombs. Like, yeah, you can't go in and say, where are the bombs? You can't say it. You just can't. And so people in my field, especially people who are not at the ground level, they will literally be like, yeah, but where's the threat information? When's the attack coming? And I'm like, man, I don't know. I'm still in the making friends mode. If I can get 100 people to trust me, and I mean not what I think is trust, when they display to me that they can accept high risk trust from me and introduce me to people that no one else is talking to, then I am way ahead of anybody else. And I can, this is the thing. I know this pattern. I know how long it takes. I know what I focus on. I know my mindset. So it doesn't matter what questions I ask. It matters that Can I display genuine care for somebody else? Can I develop, like people say, I got to establish rapport, right? And then that's where it stops. You're like, well, how do you do that? How do you know when you have it? Well, you know it. You just know it. Bullshit. When you go do combat things, if you go put a round at someone's chest at 400 meters, there's a certain number of steps you've taken. There's a certain amount of training you take. There's patterns you reinforce. There's habits, right? The same thing is true about rapport and trust. So just saying rapport is like saying, well, then you just drive your car across the country. Well, it's a little more complicated than that, right? And rapport is not hard to establish, but you can't just say establish rapport and be like, and that's all you got to do is establish rapport. Because well, if you think so, I will kick your ass and establish rapport.
Well, and that's a great question. So let me ask you this. Is it something that can be taught? Because obviously there's a charm, there's a charisma. There has to be a level of personableness. That's not a word, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
That someone has to have, I would think. Can you train? Yeah. So the question is, could you train anyone to do that? Not what you do specifically, because Pete's dope AF.
He's the best.
Yeah.
But could you train just about anybody to have the skills that you had? By the way, or is there a natural inclination?
Yeah. So first thing I want to say is to protect any word that you don't think is a word, all you got to do, these things up right here. You
this is a podcaster. No one can see the air quotes. No,
that's why you do like Cody fingers. You say that, right? So everybody can hear it and see it in their mind. And then you say, I'm going to use the word wildernessiness. And they're like, I got it. It's kind of wildernessy. Like, yeah, I got it.
Challenge. You know? No one would have questioned the word I used had I not questioned it myself. Confidence is key. If I said it, stuck with it, and just steamrolled,
ran with it,
no one would
have. You can also reverse protect that word, right? So you're like, awkwardnessly, right? And you say it like you own it, and you're like, by the way, if you don't think I own that word, bam, I just put some quote fingers around it. It's protected. It's my word. And then you move on. That's the first thing I wanted to say.
I've been saying awkwardnessly for years, so I don't know what you're talking about.
That's right.
I almost couldn't say it.
Okay, so after all the Yuck Fest, I forgot what your question was.
No, my question was, do you think, could you teach anyone to do it, or is it like... Right. Being a star pitcher, where there has to be some innate, some talent, some just general biological skill that comes that essentially not everyone could do it.
There is a certain je ne sais quoi about someone who can do this job. Je ne sais
quoi.
Right. And it is the right word to say, right? Right.
That is perfect.
Right. And then again, going back to a little bit of French, you have to have a certain penchant for some the kind of behaviors, right? So
if only you knew Spanish.
Right, exactly. Useless. I have no use. I am sans ability. Right.
Next.
So, right. The answer to your question is almost anybody who's willing to learn. Right. I would say, like, when people are like, oh, you can't have trans people in the military. Like, all you got to do is give them to me, and if they're willing to learn, and they're willing to, you know, like, work their ass off, I can make them capable in the field, right? Don't care if they're trans, don't care if they're a girl, as long as they're willing to learn. And then they've got to develop their own style. You know, in some ways, I'm like Jimi Hendrix, right? I can do this incredible stuff, and I can show you that I'm doing it, but you will never sound like me. You have to do it in your own way, right? Because charm is charm, and charm belongs to everybody individually. So, yes, nearly anybody can learn to do this. Salespeople do it. Reporters do it. I do it. We all use slightly different techniques. Mike Wallace and I are peers in that we do a lot of interviews. Mike Wallace is a bully in his interview, and he gets things where I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe he pulled that off. I watch him do these things, and I'll see the person crack on TV right in front of my eyes. And I'm like, how did he do that? On the other side, I would sit down and I would approach it completely differently with that dude. And I would get to somewhere totally different, but I would still get the information. Right. So yes, you can teach most people to do it. No, the military doesn't. Let me throw a surprising, shocking thing at you. We don't teach people how to do this well in the military at all. So it's always going to be the case that you learn because of the people mentoring you. You learn because your experience, which none of us get enough of it. And you learn because you read a lot of books and you just slowly OJT, on the job train yourself to becoming capable. But again, everybody focuses on threat instead of like, because me and a couple of the guys are like, you have to build trust. You have to build trust. You have to understand it. You have to test it. You have to see them bring back trust to you. Like, we can extend trust because we're Americans, and we can just give trust on credit. You cannot do that in most of the world to people and expect to get a good outcome. They will purposely take advantage of you And I've heard that said to me in so many different countries, right? So you have to understand that you're extending trust that they could never do, especially if it's high risk. For them to introduce me to their high level friends, it's an enormous trust thing. And so I'm like, hey, I want you to come out and I want you to meet so-and-so, but you cannot bring any of your army friends. You have to come by yourself. Okay, well, this is dangerous in my part of the world, right? So am I going to do this? Like, well, how are you going to protect me? And this is where the culture comes in. And if I know how to work culture properly, I can mitigate that risk and make the call to say yes. And if I'm not sure if I want to do it, I can find a different way to dance with that person and get them to set that meeting up, but do it in a way where everybody knows they're safe. And that's because I genuinely want them to be safe, right? So there's a lot of dancing that goes on that I know how to do. And frankly, other people don't. And here's how the difference between my expert level on this stuff and like an army person we'll just say an experienced beginner, right? Which most of them are, they really never get past that point. So when I'm talking to someone, I'm thinking about a bigger picture, and this person I'm talking to is probably not the last person I'm going to meet. I'm going to meet someone even more connected, and I'm going to break into this environment. Again, these are people doing nefarious things, illegal things. They're highly influential, and they don't need to talk to me. I offer nothing to them. I will break into that group of people before my peer will, because I'm not focused on threat. I'm never going to ask, where are the bombs? I'm never going to say who's doing illegal things. I'm never going to target anybody. I'm going to say, what's one thing that I can help you solve right now? I'm not talking about electrify the nation. I'm not talking about bring fresh water or sewer plants to your, I mean, like right now, tomorrow, hey, Pete, you have so much of this. Could you bring some of this to my house? Could you bring some of this to my community? And then I work on solving that problem for them to establish trust. And when they reciprocate that, I'm like, now that you've done that, who can I talk to? Who else should I be talking to who's influential, who needs my kind of help? And they're like, oh my God, you didn't do anything for me hardly at all, except for get the army to do this one small thing, move this piece of concrete. Here's one thing I did for a guy. I got the army to not come to his party. And he's like, just have those guys don't come. They're such terrible guests. You guys bring water. I don't want you guys there. And I'm like, cool.
They pick the music and it's always terrible.
Right. They bring all their guns, you know? And so they're like, we don't want that. You can come, you can record it. We'd love you to see our culture. And so I use the culture to my advantage to accomplish things that my peers wouldn't be able to, because we're so focused as a nation in general. When we talk about, okay, so first, let me back up. People talk about emotional intelligence, right? EQ. Here's the thing. Cultural intelligence is its parent, right? So if you can do culture well, you don't have to feel someone's pain as the only way to figure out who they are. You can just say, I accept who you are and that you're here in this point. I don't have to condone it. I don't have to like, hey, it's great that you guys have sex with boys on Friday. I don't say that. But what I say is, I get it. I understand it. You guys have a different world. You grew up in a different place. And so if I'm looking for their cultural past to solve my problem, I don't have to solve it my way. I don't have to say you have to do court systems the way we say it. I just want to know, how do you guys resolve a murder in the tribal system? And they'll explain it. And I'm like, under what conditions would you go to the court to solve this? Because we're desperate to set up a court system in all these places that we go to. I know, like, under no conditions would we go to the court to solve a murder. I'm like, but we're trying to set this up. The police are like, we understand that. We will never use that system. Now, if you're a commander, did you want to know that that's their sentiment about the courts and the police?
Absolutely. Yes.
You're desperate to know that. And no one's telling you that. So you think, hey, these police are trained. This is awesome. Check off, stabilize the country through a solid police force. Meanwhile, I'm like, hey, Abul Tushan, would you ever call the police? Like, hey, Pete, there's no cell phones out here. I couldn't call the police if I wanted to, right? And so you're like, hey, Commander, by the way, in this whole valley, there's no electricity, no cell phone coverage. So they would never call the police. They would just get into a fight, you know, which looks to us like a criminal thing. They're like, no, we're just having a firefight. We're trying to settle an argument. We can't settle with talking, we've moved up to guns, you know. And you're like, by the way, boss, that's none of our business. They've got it settled. Leave it alone. And they love, commanders love that.
So Pete, I had about 12 questions, but you're a very fast talker and you give a lot of information. So I'm at number 12, but Michelle, I feel like you haven't said anything for a minute.
No, I'm okay. I want to hear what you're okay. going with.
So all right. Again, keep in mind that I've already forgotten the 11 questions I had in the last 60 seconds of you talking, because my God, you are knowledgeable in what you do, which who else would be, but I'm curious. I can't imagine you were the only person doing what you were doing in the area you were doing it in. So were there any, not, oh my God, like bonuses or whatnot? Like, say they send out six of you to do the same thing. Did you get any kind of extra compensation or attaboys for being the first one with the information or getting farther than your counterparts? How did that work? Or were you the only one? But I can't imagine.
You don't want too much. So everybody's collecting information and everybody believes they know how to do it. And basically nobody has the actual displayable, teachable skills to do this, right? I'm very fortunate and I'm not the only person, but I have a lot of skills. So I'll go out with people who are not collectors, who believe that they are, right? And they're finding information, but they're biased and their incapacity to sit down and watch. So we'll use civil affairs teams, right? So they'll come in and they'll say, hey, boss, that's the commander. Hey, boss, we're going to come in and we're going to spend some money. We're going to paint the government center. And so my ears perk up because I know the pattern. I'm like, aha, aha, we have something we can find out. And keep in mind, I don't focus on threat. I focus on trust and I focus on us fucking up less, right? I hope I can swear on the show, but that's the appropriate term. So I hear, aha, they're going to paint the government center. Okay. And then we always want to know, like, well, what's that going to do? Oh, well, that is going to cause the Afghans, in this case, to trust the government more. And I'm like, aha, the bullshit detector has gone off and it is true. That is not what's going to happen. And so I know when they're planning, at least in civil affairs, they don't have the chops to actually do this job in a reliable, repeatable way. They might have wins every now and then, but they can't transition to the next team and say, this is how we did it. They all go by the book, right? And this is why I know the pattern, because I know that they're all off the mark. They're all focused on 90. And I'm like, you should be focused straight up and down. You're thinking two-dimensionally in a circle and I'm thinking in a sphere. And by the way, I'm lying to you about that because I'm actually thinking in a fourth dimensional way, but you can't handle that yet. So,
oh my.
Yeah. So we'll go to the field and I'll say, I know at some point I need to ask several people, not in the same trip over the course of time, about the government center. Hey, looks like it's a new color. What happened over there? I don't know. I guess they fucking painted it. Maybe the Americans did it, you know? And you're like, well, what do they do in that building? They don't do a damn thing in that building. So you're telling me that in that building, nothing. What is the purpose of that building? And the person will be like, all right, listen, you're bugging me about it. I'll tell you. That is where the government is. Okay, what's the last thing they did for you? They bought a goat for me and didn't pay for it. How's that? And you're like, oh, I'm going to write that down in my book. That bit of information is so powerful to a commander because they're like, I thought we were going to paint this thing and people were going to like the government. You've talked to 10 people at random, regionally in an area, and you're telling me that they don't even know what goes on there, never visit there. I'm like, yeah, but you know what? I think we can fix that. I think we can get people to come to this place, but it's not about painting it. And so then the boss looks at the civil affairs people and he's like, let me know what else you got. And I'm like, well, what are you guys doing next? You know? And they'll say, oh, the agricultural team is going to come teach pomegranate farmers how to grow better pomegranates. And I'm like, oh boy, let me get after that. So they'll go and they'll do their training and I'll go right afterwards and I'll talk to the pomegranate farmers who, by the way, I respect. And they know that I respect because I'm curious about their business. And I'll say, what did you learn today? And then they tell me incredible things. What are you going to do now that you've learned these things? And they're like, not a goddamn thing.
Is pomegranate code for poppy?
No, not at all. But there are poppy growers where I was at.
No doubt. Because when you said earlier about, you know, you don't have to agree with the culture to appreciate or understand the culture. First thing, yeah, I thought of was, and I had a feeling it was Afghanistan, because I remember reading that there are just so many poppy fields for the production of heroin, but the U.S. soldiers couldn't do anything because it's their culture and they weren't allowed to really get involved at that level. That was the first thing I thought of. So when you said agriculture and pomegranates, first thing I thought of was poppy farms for heroin.
Yeah. Well, look, I could talk about poppy farms and in the same kind of examples. It's just another variation of the same thing. So now you're talking about the counter drug people. So not the ag people, the counter drug. Like, we're going to counter this drug. We're going to interdict. And so I'm talking to the governor. I've built trust with this guy. And I know it because he's talked to me in a way and he's displayed it to his peers. And I'm like, there is trust here. This guy respects me. He knows I respect him. So he says, hey, Pete, here's what I want to do. And we're way down the road in our relationship now, right? Months and months in, right? And he's like, here's what I want to do. I want to, because I'm a man of God. So he was a governor. He was a former Mujahideen Russian killing warrior. And he was a religious scholar, respected, right? So he's like, here's what I want to do. And I'm like, what do I have to do? He's like, you don't got to do anything. Just like always shut up and I'll teach you what you need to know. And I'm like, okay, great. It's like, I'm going to go to these farmers and I'm going to get them to commit to not growing poppy because they know by Islam it's wrong, right? And so I'm like, okay, cool. I have to do nothing in this case. He's using his own culture. He's using his own religion to get these farmers to not grow poppy. And I'm like, cool. And I'm writing all this down. I'm taking notes. I'm like, hey, man, here's something that we're going to work on. We're going to see how this goes. And I'm like, are you confident you can do this? He's like, not necessarily, but I want to try to see if I can learn, right? Yeah. And this is the governor being honest. And me telling this to the colonel, he's like, holy shit, this guy's working on trying to govern his people. How great is this? Let's stay out of his way. So there was a program, right? And we funded a thing for the government of Afghanistan. It's like, hey, farmer, we understand you want to get paid and we don't want you to grow poppy. If you don't bring in a poppy crop, then we will compensate you thusly, right? So the government of Afghanistan is going to do this. Oh, this is great. This is fantastic. This has me excited. I'm like, all right, I believe I know what's going to happen, but I can't wait to try it. I'm like, awesome to the governor. Let's do it. And so he does. He gets all the farmers to agree. They all thumbprint off on the contract. We are not going to grow poppy. I'm like, all right. So we wait. And then poppy season comes. And he's like, well, all the farmers grew poppy. And I'm like, I thought they weren't going to. He's like, well, they said they weren't based upon my promise to pay them. And the government above me failed to give me that money to award them to these 25 farmers for their crop. And because they're smart people and they know how to survive, they hedged and grew poppy anyhow. And so what we learned was the government completely failed that local governor. And that local governor is out in the middle of nowhere, can barely get any money. So how long would your government work if the program, like you're like, hey, come in for a small loan grant at the Small Business, you know, Associate SBA, we're going to hand out $5,000 to any business that comes down that has a business bank account. And then you get down there and you set up your business bank account and they're like, just kidding. We're not doing that. You'd be like, well, I'm never coming back here again, right? That's exactly what happened in this case. Please don't grow poppy. We'll give you money to not do it. We understand your crops are valuable. Let us at least buy the poppy back. Yeah, not going to do that. So because we didn't pay them, they did what they had to do, which was survive. Because imagine if they not grown poppy, now they're exposed to the Taliban and it's dangerous for them. Because we can't even get to that next step because the government of Afghanistan doesn't operate. So you think about how big this is. I'm reporting this to the commander like, man, we have a lot of work to do, right? Well, this is not 2 years ago. This is 10 years ago that this happened, sure. Right? And so when they're like, hey, we're going to pull out of Afghanistan. Those guys are so solid. They're so good. The government is up and humming and running. And I'm like, that's going to fall down immediately. It's not going to last 1 second because the government doesn't work. We never, you're not going to believe this. We never tested the machine, the Afghan government machine, and said, can this government receive a request and pay someone hundreds of miles away who we don't even know, but is part of what they're supposed to do for the government? Can we see that happen? We never thought to test that. I did. Every time I tested it, an American killed the request, by the way. And so you have, because of threat. Oh, that guy's tied to the Taliban. He's also the effing governor. And by the way, who isn't tied to the Taliban, right? We're Taliban country.
Was that when Karzai was president?
Yeah. It was during the Karzai time. Yeah.
Feels like forever ago.
It does. I feel old now.
Well, the pandemic has like put a pause on everything. So everything feels like 20 years ago. Even 10 years ago feels like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really true. It does. Right? But you think about that and how valuable it is to have someone on your side to say, hey, this isn't working. Stop. Stop doing that. And when I'm giving you the example, we talked about counter drug. We talked about civil affairs, but we could talk about for days all kinds of different organizations and attempts to do these things, and they're all utterly failing. So it doesn't really matter if I look for the guy who's going to blow things up. If we're already so shitty at being successful, they don't have to do anything to us. We are our own enemy.
I would put more stock in what you said if only you spoke Spanish, though.
Would you stop with that? You're so ridiculous.
Yo soy quince tortugas.
Pete, listen, you are fascinating, and I'm blown away. Like, the stories, I would literally talk to you about this stuff for hours. I think Michelle would too.
Very interesting.
However, sir, this is a movie podcast. We're here to talk about film, sir. Oh, so I have to ask you, I'm gonna abruptly stop the conversation. Okay. Abruptly, Lily.
Abruptedly.
That's a word I use all the time.
Abruptedly.
No, I said what I said. Quotes.
There you go.
Pete, I need, what is the most realistic spy movie that you've seen?
I'll tell you exactly what it is. If I can think of the name of it, you're going to have to help me out here. Kevin Costner's in it. He plays a psychopath. Dane Cook is in it. He plays his protege, and it's like Mr. Brooks. Mr. What? Brooks.
There's a movie with Kevin Costner and Dane Cook?
Yeah.
Oh, you say that now that he said it.
Well, I mean, I remember Mr. Brooks. I don't know why I thought it was Bridges, though, and not Costner, but.
I don't have my phone. My phone's downstairs.
Yeah, I can't look it up there. But that book, that movie's called Mr. Brooks. I'm almost 100% sure of it. Just look at whatever movies Dane Cook has been in, and Mr. whatever that is. That is a great spy movie. And matter of fact, we've used that to train other spies. Like, this is how you do these parts of the operation.
He was 99.9% sure.
Yeah, he is 100% correct. Absolutely.
I was going to bet on any of the Bourne movies, but apparently not.
Yeah.
We shouldn't say, like, Fletch Lives or something.
Yeah.
Can you do that? When you see movies that are espionage or spy, can you pull yourself away from it and just enjoy the movie, or are you just like critiquing? No, that would never happen. That's bullshit. God, this is terrible.
It kind of depends. You know, like I know that Jason Bourne is a roller coaster ride, and I'm supposed to just buckle in and enjoy it. You know, so I usually can go on the ride with them, but there are certainly times when I cannot. You know, and I'm like, please. I don't think that. Matthew Damon is terribly good at that role. He continues to get spy. I mean, as a spy, right? I don't think he's particularly good at it. He's a little bit too reliant on the pensive look and say nothing. And I'm like, yeah, that's not going to work.
That is literally the entire The Good Shepherd. Did you see The Good Shepherd?
Right. Horrible movie.
Everyone hated it. I liked that. I thought it was a good movie. I like Matt Damon.
I'm just going to stare with Angelina Jolie. I'm just going to stare at her. You know, like, come on, man. You got to do better than that.
I feel like Mr. and Mrs. Smith also might not be that high up there in your spy movie world.
It's not a good movie. Honestly.
They're doing a series, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, that's adorable. Go make money and all that kind of stuff. You guys are great. Yeah. Well, I mean, you can't take it serious. And if you wanted to make a good spy movie, I could help you do it. That would be exciting and interesting. But you can't have like half of the movie, like in Good Shepherd, be no dialogue. You know, like, I need to know this answer. You know,
pensive looks convey seriousness.
Right. Right. Yeah, I know.
It's equivalent to jump scares in horror, though. Stop it.
No, jump scares are at least better. Look how pensive he's being. This is really serious right now. The music's telling us.
The other thing is like when they try to convey danger and you're like, oh, so bad. You know, like it's just, this isn't that dangerous, right? Like it's just not. So Argo, like when they do the trophy.
Pete, when you said like, Argo, I literally, that was the first thought I had. You're going to say, because the end was so suspenseful because they almost got caught. And the true story, well, is that what you're going to say? Yeah. I'll let you say
really, it. Yeah. Yeah. Like it's just so, it's tropey, right? Like find another moment and then don't even bother about the airport, right? That's bullshit. Like, okay, so this also in real life happened to my buddy Johnny Walker. Right. He was an Iraqi interpreter. He worked with the SEALs. He worked with me. He was my interpreter for a while. And when they were expelling him from the country because he could no longer stay safely, we got him out of there. He was legitimately worried that the Iraqis would shoot down the airplane because they hated him so much. Right. That's a time when you can legitimately do that. But you set that up well in advance. You don't act like, look, a bunch of students took over the embassy. Let's not act like these are people that can go out and get surface-to-air missiles and shoot down jet. That isn't what they wanted to do. They had already accomplished what they wanted. They had people in the embassy. Stop with the other stuff. Like, that's not like, oh, it's so bad, right? And so that movie was great in terms of cover and like how complicated these operations are and all that. That stuff is all fantastic. But when they tried to add the action in, they went too Hollywood on it and it became stupid and like impossible. Bridge of Spies, I thought was pretty decent overall. But again, like super slow moving. And that doesn't have to be like Jason Bourne, but they struggle to find like the real excitement. There is a book that I'm excited, I hope that they make into a movie about a guy named Dan Levin. And he's not a spy per se, but he absolutely does spy stuff. And he goes, he's got a friend who says, hey, my nephew has gone missing in Syria during the Syrian conflict. I'm hoping that you can find him and get him out safe and alive. And so he's got to go meet the most evil people in the region. This is right up my alley. I'm like, yes. And I'm reading how he's having these meetings and what it's like and how intense and complicated that meeting is. But instead of looking pensively, instead of like paying dramatic music, he's like, here is what's going on in my head. And I'm doing this. He's describing, I know you guys can't see this. This is a podcast, but I'm doing like a tight wire act where you're balancing, right? He's doing that in his head, but he's revealing it through his inner monologue. That is so much more important. When I'm talking to these guys, I'm like, how do I take this next step without compromising everything, without exposing myself to harm, right? Now, I'm going to give you a quick example of real life. So I had the ability to leave the camp by myself or with my partner and go out with the Afghans, right? People shouldn't do this. I'm not convinced, like, nobody should follow this. I'm an expert and I can do this. So I also know that the Army wants to know where I'm at and what I'm doing. They certainly don't want to be caught unaware that, hey, Pete's been going off the camp unescorted, right? They want the benefit of it, but they don't want to be surprised. So I go up to the guy who has his hands on the wheel of the ship per se, right? He's the guy responsible for all the immediate actions of everything going on. He knows that there's all these patrols going out, all these things going on, flights coming in. And so he's called the battle captain. He works for 12 hours, 12 hours on, 12 hours off. And there's another guy. And it's an intense job because there's always something happening. You're always waiting for the next thing to happen. There's always something. So they're just ready to respond, right? And I go to that guy and I say, hey, listen, if there was a guy who looked a lot like me, who was leaving the camp unescorted by any other kind of troops and letting the Afghans provide him security, would you want to know about that? And he's like, if there was a guy that looked just like you that was doing that, yes, I would want to know about it, but not really. I wouldn't want to openly know about this. And I'm like, okay, great. So basically what he said to me is, don't tell me about it, but I understand what you're saying. I'm like, if that guy was to do this, what would be the best way to help you so that if you had to do anything or you had to answer to anybody, how do I keep you out of trouble? And he's like, if that guy had a radio and he called in with like a code word and a call sign and, you know, an idea of where he was at, that would make that thing a lot better. And is this guy good at what he does? And I'm like, yeah, this guy's really good at what he does. And he's not taking unnecessary risks. However, this is risky and could put you in a pinch. And he's like, I appreciate that guy who looks like you telling me, like, let me have this kind of whole backwards conversation. Right. But, and that was real. That really happened. And the guy, so I was able to tell the guy, you don't have to know anything about this, but I will be aware that you are at risk when I'm doing this. And I accept that there is some, I'm not controlling my environment. I'm relying on somebody I trust. Right. But trust can be betrayed. Someone can override trust through violent action. So you need to know where I'm at. So you can be like, I know exactly where that dude's at. I don't know why. And he had plausible deniability, right? So that's the kind of thing they don't put into movies. Like, there's real risk. Every time I step off that camp, and by the way, almost a year after I left that camp, and the door I would go out in one area, there was a patrol and they went out. And they got blown up right out of that same gate that I would often leave out. Oh, right. And so it can happen at any time. And it wasn't for any reason other than like, hey, it's just this day. Today's operations day for those guys. And they're going to blow someone up. So it absolutely could happen. It absolutely could get out that there's an American riding with these guys. But I was going with people who also had scary people on their side as well.
Pete, where's the book?
It's on my computer, slowly being put together.
God bless. Slowly. Because my God, sir, you've got stories and you've got good stories.
You do.
How far along are you?
I got about 60,000 words together. So it's a lot, okay. But it's very hard to write because, I have to deal with my arrogance, right? I am an expert, but there is no badge that I could wear that says that. You have to believe me that I know how to do this and I've done it. And I've broken rules and I do things that nobody else does. So when I write this as an autobiography, it'd be better if someone else wrote it, quite honestly, because then it would absolve me of being Superman. I'm not Superman, right? I'm just doing the thing that almost anybody could have done if they had my kind of charm and everything.
I don't know. You did compare yourself to Jimi Hendrix, though. You're pretty much there. Yeah.
Well, because I'm great at what I do. And it is my unique style.
But see, that's but someone else. I don't know if it's I don't know if it's arrogance, though. Like arrogance is when someone says that they're awesome and they really have nothing behind them. Like you've got a pretty lengthy track record of experiences. And again, that like I don't know that enough people appreciate good pattern recognition. And this is so silly, but like even just friends of ours, like friends of mine dating, it's like you're doing the same thing. Like, why don't you see the pattern? Yeah. It's so obvious. Yeah. Like you're falling in the same pitfalls. And obviously for you, Pete, at such a grander scale, when you recognize it, when it's so repetitive and it's obvious, and why can't anyone see it? I'm actually impressed you don't have more of a God complex than you do. Like you're definitely confident, but like when you can just see the situation in a way that no one else can, and people look at you like, oh, you're crazy until you turn out to be right. Mm-hmm. Like that's so frustrating because you know it, you've told them. So I don't think it's arrogance.
Can I give you an example confidence. Of what that looks like in real life?
Please.
Absolutely. So, and this will be in the movie, right? So when you sit down in Afghanistan every several months, because everybody has got to track everybody, right? You got to report up. Hey, how are you guys doing out there in your province? Oh man, we just had a big meeting and it's required by everybody to have this thing. So we'd sit down in the big meeting and we would all of the facets of what we were trying to do, police competence, training, all these things, right? Like how is everything going? And one of the funny things is we're looking at hospital care, right? And we're briefing the commander in hospitals and like, okay, we'll just say county, in County X, sir, there is no hospital there. We're going to give it green light, go, all good. And the commander's like, whoa, hang on. And this guy's been around, right? This guy's been a commander in Iraq and everything else. He knows this stuff. And so he rightfully says, no hospital. How are we getting a green light there? You know? And then his second goes, sir, we've lowered the bar in County X. And they're like, Roger. Right? So literally, they just know they failed. And they're like, hey, all we're going to do is change the rules and be like, it don't matter that there's no hospital there. Mm-hmm. And so that's one aspect, right? That literally happened in front of my face. And it's like a Simpsons moment. It's like, sir, we've lowered the bar, you know? And you're like, oh my God, it happened, you know? And then and it's like, so that's Smithers. And obviously Mr. Burns like, yes, lower all of them, you know?
Excellent. But
yes, excellent. Lower all of the bars. And then release the hounds. So the other part of this is before this meeting starts, right? We sit down. All right, we're going to brief on all our sections on you know what's going on and where we stand, so we can tell everybody what's up. And so I love to do this. I raise my hand, right? I'm like Pete. I'm like, hey, I recognize a pattern here. I've seen this a few times because I've seen unit after unit come through this exact area. I've not left. You guys did. I'm going to say this out loud right now because you all need to hear it. This is a stakeholder meeting, right? Where are the Afghans? Ah, right. Yes, of course you'd say that. This is a classified meeting. And I'm like, but it's about their government. You know, like the guys who are running the government are not here to say, hey, man, I can't get my supplies sent to me. Hey, dude, I'm paying money for all of my staff to eat every night. Where is my money? Then they come out and be like, what do you mean? Where's your money? You're not getting money. Like, how do we, Ray, you're in charge of money. What the fuck is going on? Like, ah, oh, sir, it's all green. All good to go. All good to go. Everybody's got money. We got to report it up. And you're like, dude. So these are the patterns, right? And it's Pete. It's not hard to see that. It's not hard to see. Like, you guys aren't even inviting the Afghans. You're making a meeting about their capacity a secret from them. And by the way, they know more about this stuff than you do because it turns out they're living it. It seems patently ridiculous that I'm telling you this story. And yet you know it's true.
Afghanistan... You know what? That seems like a complicated place.
Turns out it is. Yeah.
Pete, we have been talking for an hour and it's honestly felt like 15 minutes.
Have we talked for an hour?
It's almost 8 o'clock.
Oh my goodness.
And I mean, not 8 o'clock, but Pete, Michelle was telling me that you do a podcast.
I do. I do a podcast. Yes, indeed.
But you're so shy and introverted. How does that work?
I
know, right?
Yeah. I lack confidence. I had one of the high school kids say, he's like, how do you have so much confidence? How do you develop that? And I'm like, I have been shot at. When you get shot at, it changes your mindset on what's fucks important, you know?
I can only fair. Imagine.
I'm confident. I have not been shot at. Right. But you know what though? I'm not confident enough to go by Pete. I was going to say that earlier. I'm so glad that you're Pete, because I'm a Peter.
He's a Peter.
Yeah. I've never introduced myself as a Pete. Is that a confidence issue?
No.
It might be.
You know your place.
I feel like anytime I want to do it, like I have to do the arm thing and I bump the microphone, but it's like, I'm Pete, but I can't do it. Oh, she's gone.
I put my hands on my hips and go, ha ha, I'm Pete. Like that.
I'm Pete. I was a spy in the army and I'm going to tell you about it.
How can I not have swagger with that line? Come on.
Right? Sir, please tell us about the podcast.
It's called the Break It Down Show. I've got 1,300 episodes. I've talked to hundreds and hundreds of people, PhDs, authors, Nobel Peace Prize winners, Medal of Honor awardees, Oscar winners, Grammy winners, Emmy winners. I mean, you name it, right? You can get it. A lot of incredible people.
Total bragging. Yeah.
We've had some awesome people too, Pete.
Oh, I'm sure you guys have. I think you guys' show is great. It's fun. I'm having a great time.
Thank you.
One of the marks of a great show, this is for anybody listening, is when you or me or whoever, we're like, that was an hour? Because to me also, I'm like, God, I've been talking all day and I feel like that was 10 minutes. I'm just getting loose, you know? So that's a mark of a great show. You
guys love really episodes like show. This. Put it on autopilot. Told you, I get people to talk.
He is.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Oh my God.
No, so how often do you post? Are you weekly?
I do about 5 shows a week.
Wow.
Damn.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, let me just say thank you for making time for us, because that is a crazy schedule.
That is hectic.
Yeah. Yeah. I work hard. I'm awful dumb though. Like I work hard. I've had a lot of success with the show. We've had a lot of incredible people. It blows my mind all the time. And one of my marks, like, is this good? Sometimes I don't even care if anybody else listens. I'm just building a great conversation for the person that needs to hear it, right? And sometimes it's just for posterity. Like, I don't care if anybody hears this one. This one is for me to capture some of these incredible stories. I have a lot of peers, right? I've talked with a lot of self-confidence and, a dash or five of arrogance, right? And that kind of thing. But I have so much respect for so many of my peers who've done and seen the same things. They tell me these incredible stories. And I'm like, who else is asking these questions? So we can all understand that day to day, when we go to places as the United States or a coalition, you know, we screw up a lot. And you hear it like in these ridiculous, I'm just telling you my stories. There are X number times, like multiple of people that have done similar things and seen this, right? I'm just this bearer and this collector of these things. And so I get to bring my friends on, and I don't care if nobody knows this guy because he's worked on the side of a mountain like I have, talking to warlords most of his professional career. I will bring him to you because I can convince that person, that friend of mine, to come on. Like, you have to do this. You have to let the next person know how complicated this is and what the patterns look like so that they can see it. So a lot of my show is that as well. It's called Spy vs. Spy, and I have these episodes all the time. We did one on earlier this week. We did one with my commander from Bosnia. We were talking about a book that's being written about. I convinced the writer to write this story. And he's like, yeah, I got to write that story. That's perfect. And he's my buddy, Mike, and he writes military histories all the time. So my show has become this thing that allows me to network into places and people that I have no business knowing, right? I'm not great at monetizing it because I don't want to be a salesman, and I don't want to, like, you know, everybody tells me what I should do to make money. I'm like, all I got to do to make money is have you give me $100 a month, you know? And I only need so many people like that, you know? And if I can double that, I'll make you give me $50 a month. That's all I really need to do. I don't need to go to Patreon. I don't need to run ads for people's mattresses and be mattress salesman of the year. I just need the people around me that listen to my show and dig what I do and want to support my hard work. That's what I need. And that's the great thing about what we all do, is with an audience of, say, even 500 people that gave you $10 a month. Well, shit, that's a lot of money, you know? And you're like, yeah, we make pretty good money doing this. And then you can invest in marketing and get discovered. So the Break It Down Show is that. It's this incredible collection of experiences and people and experts and friends. And we just go out and do great, incredible things. And people believe in the show. Over 100 different countries have listeners, active listeners that I can see listening all the time. And it's just such an incredible experience. And I love the Break It Down show. It's got its own life, its own bona fides. And it's an incredible life that I get to lead. I'm so fortunate.
Where can people find that?
Go to YouTube, type in Pete A. Turner or Break It Down show. It should just come right up. There's a lot of them. You can listen on podcast channels, but gotta be truth. Like, the podcast channels don't provide income in any kind of meaningful way. So I don't put that forward. I put it out because people want to hear it. They can, but easily a year behind, 8 months behind on podcast episodes versus the live stuff. Gotcha. And that's just because I'm not going to spend my money to push the podcast side because it just doesn't drive revenue. Like, hey, can I listen on iTunes? Yeah, you're welcome to. I wish you listen on YouTube. I listen on iTunes. Well, then you listen to old stuff.
No, that's fair. Like, I'll say this for me, I'm a day driver, so I spend a lot of time on the road just listening to stuff. Mm-hmm. Michelle, unprompted, can you tell Pete and our audience what I was very excited that I found on Spotify just yesterday?
It was the Batman TV series, just audio from the show.
So either it had to be the owners took the original Batman Adam West series, took out the video and just uploaded all the audio to Spotify. And I was in PA yesterday. So I spent 8 hours. I think I listened to 6 episodes of the original Batman. So I need content. I need content, Pete. I'm going to find it. I'll get YouTube Red. I'll put on the one more time, 'cause I'm losing my mind. Break It Down show. Thank you.
Yeah, type that in.
I'm going to find the Break It Down show, turn my phone off, and just listen to it, because otherwise I'll be listening to Batman.
Yeah. He would. It's okay, though. We all have a thing, right? I mean, we all have a thing.
I need something. It's boring. It's all highway miles.
I mean, honestly, I listen to so much like true crime stuff.
Amber Heard Johnny Depp trial.
No, true crime. Like
the Amber Heard Johnny Depp trial.
That's crazy.
Jury deliberating now.
That just feels like reality.
By
TV.
The time people hear this, there might be a verdict.
There might be.
I had a really great, and I can connect you guys, a group of investigators, and they do cold case cracking. They're called the Case Breakers. Have you heard of these guys?
No.
They have broken and are in the middle of trying to break some of the most unbreakable cases of all time. They absolutely figured out who B.B. Cooper was. They have, until further notice, they figured it out. They know exactly who it is. And all the naysayers, here's the thing that's crazy about this. There's an entire industry built around not knowing who D.B. Cooper is. So they have these conventions. And so they uninvite these guys. They're like, no thanks for coming here, guys. We want you to stay away because we're making money with this. We want the thing not to be solved. Yeah. And so they're like, and then it's great because they'll say, this is true crime and how it works. Like, if it's not your guy, you're like, I don't got any edge of evidence. That's like the standard rejection, right? They talk like that. And you're like, but they have 15,000 pieces of evidence. They just put it to analysis. They just told you the outcome. They're not going to tell you every single thing because no one wants to hear all that crap. You just don't believe them because it's not your guy, right? And they figured it out.
That's so short-sighted because I'm a skeptic and cynic by nature. Mm-hmm. And respectfully, like if somebody like that, like I would love to talk to you just to be like, well, what about this? And what about that? Just to have them just beat me up and tell me how wrong I am because they have all the information. For sure. But then again, we might have to pull our audience because this was going to be just, you know, movies and whatnot, but you and I both like true crime.
Love true crime.
You love true crime.
It's like twisted. Like I can go to sleep listening to stuff like that happily, comfortably.
You can, but I can't. Me watching you sleep soundly while listening to episodes of Snapped, that doesn't do much for my peacefulness.
What about like Forensic Files or
Thank you, Pete.
I can't help it.
You can. There's other you can watch.
It's like bedtime stories when I get sleepy.
There's other shows you could watch.
If I'm sleeping, why would I want to?
Fair.
Okay, see?
Pete, I'm completely, it has nothing to do with anything we've talked about. Are you watching Better Call Saul?
No, I don't watch a lot of TV.
Nobody does. And the mid-season finale was amazing on their final season. And everyone in my group, no one has watched it. And I just need new friends.
He yelled at me. That I couldn't share this experience.
I did. I'm like, why did we get married? She's like, because we love each other. I'm like, besides that. She's like, I don't know.
Besides,
like,
so all we, that nonsense.
So we could share epic moments. And I watched this episode without you, and I blew my mind, and you weren't there to share it. Now I'm mad at you. And she's like gardening. She's like, what happened?
Melting in the sun. And I'm like, I don't understand. Oh my gosh.
You know what? Here's what I think about that. Pete, because we're in the Pete Club, so I can do it. F that. Watch TV if you want to. Whatever it is that you need to do, I would go to New Mexico because it's a beautiful state. And just go and go to the place, you know, like where like all that stuff started and everything. And just go and who cares about Saul or who you should call or mess? Just go experience New Mexico because it's wonderful.
Do you appreciate what the universe is doing right now?
I do.
What's the universe doing right now?
Telling you to get off your ass and let's go on a trip.
Yeah. More than that, more specifically, though. We might have a reason to go to New Mexico.
You can't say in the future right now, though.
I'm just saying we may have a reason to go to New Mexico in the future.
We may.
That's all I'm going to say. And then this stranger who's become our friend,
Our friend
out of nowhere, is saying, go to New Mexico. That's divine intervention.
It is indeed.
Enjoy your trip.
Every year with my charity, Save the Brave, we drive across the country. One dude on a motorcycle, and I follow my truck, and we support that guy. We raise money the whole way. And we ride right through New Mexico, right on I-10. And it is incredible. All of it. Arizona, like the southern part of Arizona, is beautiful. Like, you can't believe how beautiful it is. And you meet all these incredible people along the way. And I would rather do that for 30 hours, right, like driving time, and meet all these incredible people than watch a show for 10.
Now he's saying Arizona too.
Yeah. Because my brother-in-law. Yeah.
Guess who's banned from this episode?
My brother-in-law, Andy, and his lovely girlfriend just live in Arizona. So he was just here with us for a couple of months, but I definitely would love to take a trip out there to see him. But maybe when it's cold here.
It doesn't matter. You know what's funny about that? Again, super sidebar, is that we just hit we're spring because we're in New York, and we had this ridiculously hot day where it was like 91, and we reached out to them in Arizona. It was cooler in Arizona than it was in central New York. How does that work?
I don't know, but I will say that
gross.
A week before Andy left, It was snowing. It was probably like 91 in Arizona, and he was like driving back to our house in a blizzard.
In the snow.
Yeah.
He leaves, and a week later, it's in the 90s.
Yeah.
Welcome to CNY.
It's crazy.
Pete, you have a charity. How do you just pepper that in? I heard you. Tell us about the charity.
Save the Brave. Our goal is to get veterans to stop wanting to kill themselves. And then when they inevitably do, we try to help take care of the families. Because there's never enough pieces that you can pick up to help. And that's our desperate endeavor. And so we take veterans out. Look, and here's the thing, right? And this is a big thing. If I could say anything on this show that's important, we often take the approach of, hey, if you're ever feeling like this, like you want to clear yourself, reach out, call me, right? That is bullshit. Before the healthy person, interact with people. Whether they're on the edge of suicide or not, people hanging on to the end of their rope with both hands cannot reach out to you. Do not ask them to do it, because I can tell you, as someone who's been suicidal, and I fight that stuff all the time, right? I get therapy for it. I'm not in danger right now, but I know that fight and I do it all the time. We don't have the ability. We expect everybody to fail us, and you not calling us is the failure that feeds this act, right? And you can't save everybody. You have to be willing to say, this is going to be terrifying. I'm going to lose my friends, but I'm going to do what I can. And that's fellowship, that's getting together, being of service of people. And if you're an adult and your life is at all stable and you're not doing charity, you are doing the wrong thing. You have the ability. You don't have to do veterans. You can do whatever you want. You can save the SEALs. You can preserve the environment. There are so many charities. Don't start a new one. Find one that does what you do and go in and have an incredible impact on them. That will be enriching to you in the first place. And then as you slowly advance towards this goal, and you never accomplish it. You never stop a veteran suicide, but you're doing things every day and you're finding people that are like, I am desperate to do something else. Well, let's go. Time and money, attention. These are things that you can do easily. And that's what I do at Save the Brave. I help us you know, with awareness and all these different things. And if it means I've got to not be on my show for a week to drive across the nation to help my buddy Scott raise money, then I'll be damned if I'm not going to do it. I'm going to drive across the nation with him and make sure that he's good, talk to incredible people, raise awareness, raise money, and hopefully, look, save the next thing. My brother killed himself, veteran, in October of 2021, right? And so here I am fighting this fight partly for my own survival, and my brother loses the battle. And so now I have this family that I have to take care of in a way I've never thought of before, right? But Save the Brave's been there. They've helped with funds. They've helped with support, all these things. I know firsthand what happens when you support a charity like ours. And here's the thing is, like, people often get down on charities like, you know, everybody's getting rich. Nobody's getting rich here. We do this because we're passionate about it. And we do it and we work our asses off. Anybody who wants to work with Save the Brave will see, like, hey, man, quit asking us to do so much stuff. Like, you guys are so damn busy. But that's how you do it. You fight this stuff like the veterans we are. We used to work 20 plus hours a day in combat. Well, we're going to work hard as hell to try to get some relief for these people that are suffering. And it's not them reaching out. It's us constantly working to help them, letting them know they matter, letting them know that we're here, being in front of them way before they get into danger, and just doing this constantly all the time.
Did you have any, well, first of all, I mean, our condolences to your family and for your brother.
So well, thanks. Yeah.
Was there any awareness or any clues that this might happen? Was he suffering from depression, or was it a complete shock to you?
No. Yeah. So for a lot of our family, it was a complete shock because he and I were talking about it. He had made a significant attempt on his life in 2020, which, big shocker. It was a hard year for everybody. And he worked at a refinery in our hometown, which is like such a great place to work. And they were financially stable and he loved doing his job, but something changed. Maybe he aged out and his whatever mental illness stuff that he had passed his ability to control it, but he lost control of those things. And he stopped being the great employee that he was. He stopped being the great dad that he was. He started being this angry guy, this scared guy, this guy that was hard to get along with. And, you know, you often take to booze or drugs or whatever it is, trying to save your own life. But you can't make the right decisions because you're too sick. And if we could see mental illness on someone's leg, you'd be like, oh, my God, sit down. How can I help you? But you can't. And we hide it. Right. And so he was sick. He was deeply sick. And when I talked to my nieces, and, you know, they're older, so they can comprehend it. But they're older. They're like 20 and 22. They're not that old. Right. No. I'm like, look, you're going to get your real dad back over time. Like, you'll get the guy who was the wonderful father who loved you tremendously. And the guy towards the end, who was so deeply sick. Like, they're, my older niece, her best friend's mom died from cancer. And I'm like, this is no different than how your friend's mom died. Your dad was deeply sick and we tried our best to save him. And he did everything. He had everything. He had the dog, he had the medicine, he had the therapy, he had all those things. He just didn't have lengths in his life, you know? It's another thing too. It's not weakness. My brother was tough. I'm 5.5 years older than my brother and I beat him up all the time. We played rough all the time and he had no quit in him, but he did reach the end of his life. And so now you have to deal with it. Right. And that's what we try to help people realize, is that stop saying, I put this on LinkedIn the other day. I forgot, like, there's a SEAL that killed himself. And this guy's like, reach out. And I'm like, bullshit, not reach out. You reach out. You reach out to everybody you can. Talk to you. Think about someone, call them, text them, get together with them. Don't wait until someone dies to get together. Get together all the time. And I'm like, he's like, yeah, time to time, you should tell people. I'm like, no, not time to time. Constantly. Gosh. If you missed it, like, suicide's not just a veteran thing. There's a lot of people that do these things. So reach out to each other.
No, 100%. It is sad though that armed services does have such high numbers of suicide. What did you find helpful for you? Was it therapy? Was it friends reaching out? If you don't mind talking about it,
I don't mind talking about it. It's important that I do, right? Because every day I have suicidal ideation. I don't act on it because I take seriously, deadly seriously, the consequences of me leaving it uncontrolled, right? So my PTSD, I know that my body responds in a different way now to things chemically, because I've seen so much combat time. And so I've learned to realize that. I've learned to, like, change. Like, when I sense something is changing for the bad, I've come to realize I can alter that. And I can, if I have a bad day, you know what I have? So I used to say, like, all the time, and it's still true. Instead of trying to jump over an 8-foot bar every day to prove that I tell myself that I'm working hard, some days the bar gets put right on the ground and I'm like, can I walk over that bar today? And yes, I can. And that's all it. So I'm working on survival. I'm not working on breaking world records. Mm-hmm. And I've learned to make that okay. So like, I'm like, hey, today's a day when I'm just taking naps because I can't do it. I'm depressed. I need to get through this. And I'm not saying depressive sleep where you sleep for 25 hours. I'm saying, let me sleep through these next couple of hours, see if I can calm down. And it usually for me now, it passes, right? But there are times when all of a sudden, unreasonably out of the blue, I'm like, I just wish I could be dead right now. Every day that happens, right? And so I've worked on it by being of service to people, always like, hey, you'll hear me, if you know me at all, I'll be like, hey, how can I help? What can I do to help? And I mean it, right? If you have something you think I can do, then let me know and I'm going to do my best to do it, right?
So it helps them, it gives you a purpose.
Yeah. I need a purpose. I need to be helpful to people. I need to matter because professionally, I was never able to find a job. This is what triggered the worst of it, right? No one would talk to me even or even interview me. And like, oh, well, you're not working hard enough. Oh, your resume sucks. No, motherfucker, I've got a professional resume. I've got incredible skills.
I want to say it's because you don't speak Spanish, but it's because I'm a child.
You are a child. Oh my God. Now, right. Pete, is there a website for the charity that people
save
can find?
SaveTheBrave.org. You can always go there. And we do comedy shows. We do this ride. We're going to start doing some musical things. Mm-hmm. We do all kinds of stuff. And
we will definitely link that in our description so people can find that if they
want.
Awesome.
That's incredible.
Help. And obviously we will put up a link for your actual show as well. Because we want people to get from you what we got with you, because you are such an amazing gentleman to listen to, and I thank you for your service, and I appreciate everything that you've been through, that you still go through, and that you give back going through it yourself.
You're gonna make him arrogant.
Oh my God, stop it.
I am God. I'm gonna do my Alec Baldwin quote. I am God. Just to get it back to movies for you guys.
No, honestly, Pete, everything Michelle said, 100%. And you know what, Pete, because you've been such a sport, we're not even going to put the Spotify or iTunes. We're going to put the YouTube link to your show.
Come on.
Keep them current. Keep everything new and
fresh. Keep
them
current. Keep Pete getting paid to do what he loves, to keep helping people, to keep having these amazing stories. I'm excited because I've seen similar stuff different. Like, have you ever watched on YouTube any of like the Wired interviews where they have ex-CIA or lie detectors? Yep. Like, those are super interesting. And if yours is anything like that,
I've reached out to those guys and they no-showed me. Like, they would never respond.
I was going to ask, how could you have been on? That's terrible.
All I can do, and the big idea, I've sent these people notes. I'm like, hey, I'd love to come on the show. I've got the credentials. Now, they get pitched all the time. I'm not mad at them. But that's how hard it is to get the word out. Like, you're going to go to some 70-year-old CIA lady who puts on costumes. Okay, great. That's fine. I did this damn job for years, and she never sniffed a battlefield.
I've seen the episode he's talking about.
Have you really?
Yeah, she talks about how you can't change certain things because it's got to be relative to your face, but there's certain things you can change that'll make a big difference. Huh. And I can see her. She's very buttoned down.
I've never seen that episode. I've never seen any of them.
Oh, they're great.
Let me ask you this, though. You've seen that episode. Do you think I could kick her ass?
100%. You would run circles around her.
Yeah.
Actually, I think she was on – she might have been on 2 – because there was another series where it's like explaining things or they had 2 of the same person, but it's fun. But no, you would absolutely destroy her in entertainment and knowledge.
That's right. Yeah. She's super skilled. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. She's super skilled.
No, 100%.
I don't want to diminish that. Yeah.
No, it's a great episode. I highly recommend the Wired channel on YouTube, who's not paying us, but I still think it's awesome.
Yeah. But I mean, you have such a good energy. Like, you can feel your energy. I don't know why they didn't pick you. You have to try again.
He was trained to convey this energy. You're going to start telling him secrets. Don't be fooled.
That's right. I've got you guys. Next thing you know, you're going to invite me to your house in CNY. We're all going to have too many shots.
Pete, come over. I've got 5 cats.
You let him build rapport.
You'll love him times
don't
five.
Don't believe
here.
Him. He's just building rapport.
Oh,
that's right. That's right.
Well, because when we were on that phone, you were enjoying the sunshine with your cat that day.
That's right.
He's not fibbing unless he's like keeping it solid.
Have 150 pictures of my cat from the last month on my phone.
My poor kids, I don't take pictures of them anymore. It's just cats.
Yeah.
cats and birthday hats.
Fuck them fuckers. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I send the kids the pictures of the cats. I mean, there's that. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, my older son, he sends me, well, I mean, it's usually video chatting and he'll like show me his like fish.
Yeah.
Because he's got a very pretty fish named Escobar. And then my, our younger son, he's got a big fluffy cat and he'll send me videos and pictures and I bring them. Then I don't have to feel bad about sharing. Like, yeah. And occasionally I get a picture of like their face with said pet. So that's kind of nice too.
I think that's it. Otherwise, we'll keep going. Pete, is there anything else? One more time. You've got the podcast that is.
Yeah, go to YouTube/Pete A. Turner. YouTube/Pete A. Turner. Nice and easy. And there's a lot of you. If you drive, I can drive you around the world several times over with the content I've got, and I've got everything.
Nice. Challenge accepted.
PhDs, all kinds of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you let me know when you get tired of it. And then the other thing I will say is when I do this charity drive end of July from the 22nd mm-hmm. to the 30th across the country from Temecula to Charleston, South Carolina, mm-hmm. If you want to ride with me, kick in some money with the charity, meet me in whatever city you want, drive for however many segments you want. We'll kick you out, throw you to the airport and go on. But how great of a deal is that? Come out, get to go drive across this beautiful country for me for a while. I'll yak your ear off or you can yak your, whatever it is. And, you know, kick in, well, I don't know what, 100, 150 bucks, whatever you want to do, whatever you can afford, kick that money in, meet some incredible people, see amazing parts of the country. And you know what happens when you meet people in the U.S.? They don't suck. Everybody's awesome. They're beautiful and people fall in love.
I don't know. I've seen, people on the TV screen. Are you saying I should actually meet people in real life?
Yes. Yes. Go meet them in real life.
And where can I donate? One more time. And
Save the brave.org.
Save the brave.org.
Save the brave. Yeah, that's it.
Michelle.
Well, Pete A. Turner, please thank you again for joining us this evening. We will definitely, like I said, we're going to be linking up your information so people can find you. We want them to ride with you. We want them to listen to you. And we want them to help you
donate to an amazing cause.
Absolutely. And until next time, everyone, that's a wrap.
I don't know why I added the gun noises.
I don't know why you did either.